Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah.
And it's a metal dog eat world out there.
I'm EP.
I'm going to fucking kill you.
Hello, and welcome back to the internet's EPiest, number one EPiest history podcast, The Lore Boys. I'm your host, Ethan Palmer, particularly EP today.
Yeah.
With
I'm
me,
James.
Always,
James. I'm James. Don't remove the SL because I am EP over here.
No, I'm literally EP. I'm Ethan Palmer. What are you talking about?
Oh,
yeah, of course.
Shit, you're the EPiest of them all.
You can probably get EP as an anagram for my name. I'm EP Pete. I'm only regular EP, though. I have neither a baby nor a World of Warcraft account, so I just, you know, woke up at 9 and did errands on a Sunday.
There you go.
I'm not actually very EP. I'm excited and ready for some lore, to be honest.
I'm always.
Yeah, Jamie's in vacay mode. He cannot be stopped.
Yeah.
He just started, baby.
Jamie's got some serious gaming to get to. We're eating into his vacation time with all this work.
Honestly, yeah, I wish you'd all just shut up by now so I can move on.
Yeah. Welcome back, everyone. This one, we're finally finishing the Dominaria United story. Sorry for the delay. I wanted to look up when we released the part two, which I think was two months ago, maybe a month and a half ago, at least.
I don't recall. Does your daughter speak yet at all?
What's that?
Does your daughter speak yet at all?
Can she answer? Can she answer for your crimes against you?
Yeah. I was gonna say, has she apologized for the delay?
She says a couple good words. The best thing she says, cracks me up every time, is she says bye bye, but she says it with like such sass. She goes bye bye. Anytime she sees someone leave.
Okay.
Your wife does say that every once in a while, though. I've heard her do like as part of a bit where she's telling a story. She does punctuate it with a bye. So she's listening, clearly.
Yeah. I like that. She's very good at knowing dogs and cats, too.
Yeah.
Point about even on a screen. Yeah.
Yeah. Banana. You know, she said cat before she said data. So, you know, make of that.
Little man's round.
Yeah.
She speaks now, and she spoke whenever the Dominaria Part 2, Dominaria United Part 2 came out, for okay. sure.
So she has apologized for the delay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Officially.
It's more work than my daughter, half my daughter, but you guys will hear me, the patrons of the show will hear me come into the podcast, I think like 25, or come into the bonus audio 25 minutes in tomorrow, because I was putting my daughter to sleep because she decided to wake up. We're finishing the story today. So far we have, you know, some plucky planeswalkers. They're little mage companions who can't planeswalk. Facing off against the Phyrexian invasion of Dominaria, led by, who remembers? Huh?
Shieldred?
Actually got it.
Oh,
Spider One.
Yeah, Shieldred, the Whispering One.
Yeah, I was gonna say Karn.
Karn's
a good guy.
Yeah, Karn's the protagonist we've been following. He's not the leading the Phyrexian invasion on Dominaria. He's leading the fight against the Phyrexian invasion of Dominaria. So
yeah. I can see where you're going. Yeah, I remember the beginning. Karn's looking through like in a big tunnel, and he like he tunnels through into like an ancient workshop, and he found a Phyrexian hideaway place, and then he brings a bomb behind his back because he sees like a huge construct being made, and he's like ready to blow it up, but then it blows up on him and everything crumbles on him or something.
He fights a cyborg who collapses the roof on his head.
Right with the eye.
Yeah,
right, and then that gets robot. All buried, undug out, but he found something in there that's really valuable.
Yeah, so I can't remember if he found the Silex there, or I think he just found something to decipher the Silex.
Like, yeah, he had been lying about it the entire time because he's so paranoid about everything being a Phyrexian, and I believe was proven correctly when a bunch of politicians and birds, like the bird hanging on the windowsill at Snow White's cabin, were also
They're at a meeting, and he's like, that bird's not real. And then, like, Alex Jones crawled out of the bird. And then,
Ajani,
Ajani, the Leonin planeswalkers, rescued him from under the rubble. They go to, like, this, like, summit where they're, like, people are having, like, peace talks about, like, a petty squabble in the grand scheme of things, I guess. And then Karn
land
is trying
reform
to...
is not petty if you don't know about the robot invasion, Ethan. I don't
Now Karn
Karn is trying to warn everybody about the incoming Phyrexian invasion. They're like, Karn, you're paranoid, buddy, okay?
But
there's Phyrexians in the multiverse, but they're not here. They can't planeswalk, but they're all there.
And he won't tell anyone about the Silex. And then, they're all there.
He won't tell anyone where the Silex is. So he hides the Silex in Joyra's workshop on the Mana Ring, which in Media Res is where we are right now in the story. But if we jump back.
He's running around the building first, right?
So So that was the part two that we talked about. The bird escaped. Ajani chased it at the window.
Yeah.
A bunch of the people at the summit turned into Phyrexians. And then there's five of them. There's Karn, Teferi, Joda, the Archmage, who's not a planeswalker. There's Jaya, the planeswalker. And then there's another just mage who turns out to be a Phyrexian in the But they're playing they're playing Among Us in there the whole time, where they're trying to find the Phyrexian. It's running around. They lock down the tower. Karn locks down the tower, even though unbeknownst to them at the time, like the full on Phyrexian invasion was happening outside the window, basically. But they couldn't know because they'd locked down trying to find this one Phyrexian.
They'd close the shutters. I would have referenced the thing personally, as far as like paranoid. Right, it's like
That's like Boomer Among Us,
Yeah, Boomer, me exactly. So like, Karn is like dipping it into blood, and he's like, "We'll do you next," and like touches the hot wire, and then the blood turns into a bird, which then turns into a monster instead of just going like. And John,
which turns into Alex Jones,
what's the Boomer
we'll do
Among
you next,
Us?
Joe?
The thing, what? John Carpenter's
the thing. Okay, was it
Among Us? The premise is the same as the movie The Thing, where it's a bunch of people they don't know who the monster is the
or
whole
like
time.
Lou Gallo
Have
or
you
whatever.
Ever drank The Thing potion at 3 a.m. and turned into The Thing? Have you seen the Among Us potions, guys?
A friend of mine sent me that today for some reason.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And I'm getting really good at not thumbs-upping or liking posts that people send me that I don't find funny. So Kyle will send me those Warhammer 40K Primark ones where it's like Alex Jones or Joe Rogan head swapped in. I ain't watching that fucking shit. I've seen it 1,000 times. Another guy sent me the Amogus potion one of the weird guy with the red.
It's a whole
today.
It's a whole like subset on YouTube. It's like if you want to creep yourself out, you can look up the X potion, and you usually have to drink it late at night, and then something happens. So this guy's like
unsolved murders in your town. If you want to get creeped out, no, that's some Amogus shit.
If you drink the Among Us potion at 3 a.m., you become the imposter. Yeah. Anyway, okay. Let's
So part two was the tower, the Among Us episode.
Yes,
I might have said part three earlier. But we're definitely doing part four today.
I see.
Part three, we already did. It was gathering allies around Dominaria for a fight on the Mana Rig. So we had some people go get some elves. We had some people go get some like human fighters. A Phyrexian dreadnought burst out of a mountain.
Yes. Second last mission in Witcher 3 when you go and collect all the people that you've helped so far and get them back.
Yeah.
For anyone who's listening a month from now and has just like gone back to back on these episodes, sorry for the long recap, but it's been a long time for my co-hosts. I really made them wait. So,
I don't remember things I've written, so it's very helpful to like be the callback like later on in the episode. We're like, oh, that's nice. But the magic stuff I find easier to remember, Phyrexian specifically, because as I've said multiple times, I think these guys are very cool.
It's probably also because I'm such a good storyteller, but whatever. So where we left our heroes, they had split into groups to gather allies to bring to the Mana Rig, this ancient structure where the defenders of Dominaria plan to make their final stand. So now this episode, we'll talk about the final stand. The story of the defense begins with Teferi pinning a Phyrexian to a table for inspection. it seemed, I don't know if you remember, I think I ended the last episode. The last line is there's a spy among the new coalition or whatever. So they know that there's like a spy in there.
Whenever you say pinned to the table, is it like holding him down by his throat? It's a sex thing. Or is it with like
choke me daddy?
Or is it like, both hands, nose is touching, like, like really close?
I believe
one of my step bros is a Phyrexian. We need to find out which one it is. What are you doing, step bro? He's like, blah, 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 like ripping off like a bunch of metal spikes.
I'm gonna compliate.
Glistening oil everywhere.
Oh no. I love the nerd costume that porn guys are often put in of like the buttoned up top button around the neck and the glasses with the band-aid around the middle there.
Yeah.
I don't watch that stuff.
It's immoral.
Yeah. What would Jesus do? He had holes in his hands. He couldn't masturbate.
Dude, he could masturbate better.
Well, it depends how big the holes are and how big the... Never mind.
A nail's a pretty big hole, I think.
So we got... who's... Johnny's pinning
Teferi.
Down?
So Teferi has been... We have Teferi. Sorry, I didn't prep pictures for all the planeswalkers for you yahoos again, but he's black, blue aligned, or sorry, black is in skin color, blue aligned mana color, like chronomancer. Yeah, he like controls time. We talked about him a lot in the past. He was friends with Karn in like high school,
right? Yes, he's from the wizarding school where he saved
the Talarian Academy.
Exactly where he used and time when, stopping to stop it from like, crumbling and crushing people, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He saved a lot of Dominaria with like these big time bubbles that he had like set up all over the place. We have Jaya, who's like a fireman, like a pyromancer essentially. She's fire using. Ajani we rejoined with when Jaya went to go find the Benelish Knights. And then the Benelish or the Compassion Knights captain was like, oh no, we got to go get my dad, Aaron Compassion, before I'll help you. So they went to go get his dad, found a Johnny there at the camp. They fought a Phyrexian dreadnought, the Golden Argosy, like the golden ship that can fly through the sky, full of Keldon warriors showed up and like helped them in the fight as well. So these are all like allies that we've gathered at this point. There's Joda. He's like the Archmage. He's immortal, so he's not a planeswalker. He can't leave Dominaria, but he's lived for thousands of years at this point. And then there was a guy who's dead because he was a Phyrexian all along.
Right.
And Karn, of course. The Iron Golem.
Yeah.
Teferi, Chronomancer, pins a Phyrexian to the table with a knife. Not much time to interrogate them, however, as a klaxon blared. So I'll start us off with a quote here from Langley Hyde's A Whisper in the Wind. The desert seethed. The Phyrexians beneath the mana rig were so numerous they resembled an iridescent pool in the bright Shivan light. Its surface heaved like a sea about to be breached by a whale, rippled, and then broke as an immense monstrosity arose from its depths. This was not another sortie. Teferi roared, "Status of the cannons? Not ready," one woman shouted. The first wave of Phyrexians scaled the mana rig's sides. Coalition fighters shoved back their ladders, chopped off grappling hooks, and jabbed spears into the twisted beast. A Phyrexian dreadnought lifted itself from the horde, whale-like in its immensity. Only no whale Karn had ever seen possessed a centipede's legs or mandibles.
Yeah.
Stones plinked from its glistening black body and small fibers writhed out from its armor plates as if tasting the air. It lumbered toward the mana rig, its mandibles clacking. "Nine hells," Teferi muttered. "Aim for the dreadnought, for its thorax. Hold until you're ready to activate the cannons." Joya emerged from the lower deck, two human technologists at her heels. She rushed to the cannons and knelt, checking the final connections. Her assistants seated themselves behind the cannons, wielding them to face the dreadnought. The cannons accumulated power, their snouts wreathed in burning blue energy. Joya waved, "Fire." The cannons released a crackling blast that slammed into the Phyrexian's thorax, charring the metal and rocking it back into its own army. Blue energy burned between its armor plates. Joya waved again, and the cannons blasted the dreadnought a second time, ripping through its weakened armor. It collapsed onto its own troops, crushing them. "Well," Joya said, "those are working." So we haven't seen too much of Joyra yet. She's Karn's like crush, essentially.
Also from Wizard School, right?
Yeah, they went to school together.
He was hanging out in her room reading the Silex or something. Yeah, I remember.
He was lying in her bed, I think was the case that we had. Just reading his Silex instructions. because she'd been missing for a while, or for like a long time, but she's back. She brought the Weatherlight. You guys remember like the ship with like a living wooden hull, the Justice League of Dominaria uses as their like floating base. There was a fight with dragons. They recruited like Darigaz was one of the allies that they had recruited last time. These dragons who like he's like the elder, one of the elder dragons. Not one of the first dragons on Dominaria, but like the second generation of dragons, and he's the biggest, meanest one, essentially.
Right, yeah, I remember that.
They
fought against the Dreadnought, right? Because it's also like gigantic or something. They needed dragons to help with that.
No, they fought against, there was like a bat winged Phyrexian, which appeared in the air attacking the Weatherlight above them, and Darigaz showed up to like tear it apart, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
To lay into it. One like small detail here, which I caught and I thought was interesting. So last year, I think, or maybe I think last year there was like the Magic has been doing a lot of crossovers. So they did like a Warhammer 40K crossover. They did a Lord of the Rings crossover.
Fallout.
They've done a bunch of crossovers, and they did a Dungeons and Dragons crossover not that long ago. And it's kind of been established in the past that Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering are the same universe. There's a Guildmaster's Guide to Ravnica, which is a D&D source book, which is Ravnica. We've talked about it's a plane in Magic the Gathering where like the Guild Pact is from, where Liliana and Jace are from. So it's like it's established canon. And Teferi says nine hells, which is in D&D, there's the nine layers of hell.
True.
So okay. It's like a common expletive in.
Bless you.
Oh, my goodness.
He just lost full control of his body there.
Oh, I didn't have my mouse to. Yeah, that's just part of it.
Amazing form on that sneeze.
I also, there's a little
sleeve
fart.
Too short to go into it, too. I didn't.
A little fart in the middle there, too. Let's see if it comes through on the audio.
I did that on my end.
I just thought it was a nice nod that Teferi said nine hells.
Nine hells.
I don't know what the implications of there being like nine hells for like the entire multiverse then. Like, does Dominaria have its own nine hells? Do all the multiverses go to like the same nine hells, you know? I don't know.
Oh yeah. It's like, we're all the same on the inside. We all go to the same nine hells.
Yeah.
Right. And racism.
What was the lore that we looked through that there was a bunch of layers in this place that we went to?
Like the Divine Comedy?
No, not the Divine Comedy. It was one of Ethan's episodes. So it would have been Magic or maybe Dungeons and Dragons, where there's like one plane and there's all these crazy
Phyrexia.
Trees on it. And
it's
then there's
Phyrexia.
Okay.
We were talking about the Phyrexian plane, how they had built, essentially. We did a buffer episode, I think, in this arc, actually. Right. I might have did a buffer episode where, or maybe it was the last, a while ago. I don't remember.
Is there nine of them?
No, there's five. One for each color of mana.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I do remember doing that. Yeah. And just like explaining the realm that each of the praetors or whatever they're called, like rules over. Blue plane, red plane, green plane.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. One fish, two fish sort of thing.
One fish, two fish, blue fish, blue fish. I blew a fish.
Something new, something used, something blue.
What if like when you were getting married, you're something new, something used, something borrowed, and something blue was just all fish? What if somebody just got you like a new fish, a used fish, a borrowed fish, and a blue fish?
What's a used fish?
A one that's been fucked.
I see.
It's those ones that got the big lips there.
One that's been complicated on, excuse me.
Yeah,
oh, of course.
Wait, what's the red fish, blue fish,
one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish?
Does that meet all of the requirements? Can we just give that one book for weddings? I think
if you don't own it, if you've borrowed it, if it's from the library,
new and used, right? That's the problem. You need a new and a used. This is a riddle. Right. What is something that is new and used?
A Phyrexian could Powell. Cover all those bases, right?
Where new it's, and used newspaper.
It's borrowing,
newspaper.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's borrowing your body.
Not blue.
Blue aligned. The new bits are the metal bits, right? Like if you just invite a Phyrex into your wedding, you don't have to buy four gifts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Yeah, that is new and used, actually, for sure.
Yeah.
And yeah, just get like some blue metal in there, get some like cobalt going.
If you get a color newspaper, I think we hit all the boiler.
Like a magazine.
One of them just had a colored newspaper.
One of them colored newspapers they got in the big city.
I think newspapers have been in color for 50 years at this point.
The Montreal Gazette and the National Post are both in color, which I only know because there is a untouched rack of them at the corner store I buy booze at.
There's a free local newspaper that goes around where I live, and then there's like a subscription one, and they've both been in color for 25 years, I think. So,
yep.
I'm gonna guess the big city ones are also.
I'm pretty sure I've had a couple articles where I've done something in there. I think they covered my unicycling once upon a time. I think they covered my school our band, Ethan.
Our band, yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
The good old days.
Oh yeah.
So the attack on the Manta Rig is on, it seems. Full on Phyrexian invasion.
Uh-oh.
But we've got some assets on our side, right? We've got cannons, clearly.
Those guns work real great. Like, they work just like on a normal thing.
Yeah. this doesn't even seem like a fantasy to me.
I didn't think they were.
No one has tried shooting them before. They've just been, like, trying to root them out politically. It's like, oh. Wait.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was going to do it. Like, that build up with, like, the big blue surge. Like, I thought for sure it would, like, fall down and then put itself back together. But I'm glad it does work.
Yeah, they're like the Tyranids, right? They're not like a mobile flesh mass.
But they're glistening
they're
oil.
They're flesh and metal, yeah. They're like they're flesh that's primarily flesh that's been turned into metal by the glistening waterways.
Like a diamond.
Yeah. They're both. It's not the last of the Phyrexian dreadnoughts more broadly that we'll see for sure. But yeah, we've got some assets. We've got a bunch of planeswalkers on our side. We've got dragons. We've got the Weatherlight, got all sorts of stuff, right? Or do we? So a shadow passes overhead while we're waging our defense. And we see the Weatherlight up above. I'm going to send you guys a picture of it. And it's not looking so hot, honestly.
It's unwell. It looks like it's made of like bug parts.
Yeah, yeah. So it's been complicated. Dang. The Weatherlight.
Oh, no. Now it's the weather heavy.
Yeah. This was like a moment in the story. I think the story's quite good. Of all the magic stories, I think Langley Hyde's story of Dominaria United has been quite good. This was like such a deflated moment where in the last episode, like the Weatherlight got attacked and the dragons showed up to save it. And it was like this big moment right at the end of the story. And then this one starts and it's like, all you get is like the Weatherlight had been complicated. It's like the only
that like happens between movies, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
What the fuck? Okay,
it's just like CGI costume.
Could have been fine, but you could have foreshadowed it better. I think when it first happened, I read it. I was like, wait, did I miss something? And I like went back to the last one. I was like rereading. I was like, when did this happen? I guess it just happened. Like,
well, yeah. You literally foreshadowed it though. You were like, a shadow passed above the battlefield.
Yeah, I said shadow four times so far this episode before talking about this.
Wow, that's the foreshadow. Calculated. Wow.
I thought it was going to be a flying dreadnought or like maybe fucking Jyn Gitaxis has showed up. And it's like, oh no, now we need more dragons. But no, it just like straight up off screen, like the whole, no one was paying attention for 2 seconds. Like, ah, oh, fuck.
I mean, yeah, like I like to think like that attack of like the bat winged monstrosity where the dragon saved it probably got like a wound and like complicated from there, right? Like it just takes it just takes a little bit for most people and most things. But like they could have set that up, whatever they did the description of the dragon saving it. It could have been like they could have like planted the seed.
Or like Phyrexian could have boarded it too. Like there could have been a fight.
Absolutely.
Like a swashbuckling fight with spider monsters on the
absolutely
throughout the decks, right?
I know we're just
speculating about like a fake bird, which is not fair, but
a fake bird goes right through the propeller. Like fake feathers everywhere, little glistening oil.
Trying to land it in the Hudson River.
It's like, oh, I think I see a river to put it down in there. It's just a river of glistening oil. Like the co-pilot is just clearly a Phyrexian. So I have another quote for you guys.
Looking
here
out the corner of his Terminator eyes, like
yeah. Just like hands just like fused to like the airplane steering wheel. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I think you can put it down over there. I have another quote for you guys. I told Jamie and Peter before the episode. This one's very quote heavy because this is all from that the one Langley Hyde story, A Whisper in the Wind, which is very action heavy because it's the, but the quote or the story continues.
I like how this is action heavy, but they left out the part where their main ship was conquered and complicated.
Again, I feel like they just needed like one or two lines in the last
paragraph
story when that fight happened, and it you know, could have come. But the ship swooped low, dropping twisted horrors from its deck. Some as small as cats, others lumbering and bear-like in their bulk, interspersed with the complicated humans. Shieldred must be hoping to overwhelm them, Karn thought, before Joyra finished installing the self-destruct mechanism on the mana rig. If these Phyrexians attacked Teferi and the Vyashino from the back, cannons would be left undefended. Karn moved to meet them. A humanoid Phyrexian leaped from the Weatherlight's deck onto the mana rig, silhouette strange yet familiar. He walked toward Karn, his double arms upraised. His pale hair, laden with metal spikes, was slicked back, and his eyes dripped black oil down his cheeks. He stretched his mouth into a grin directed at Karn. It's been quite some time, old friend. It couldn't be, yet it was. Airtie. Karn had thought him dead. Whatever techniques the Phyrexians had used to revivify him after all these centuries had left what made him intact. How he set his shoulders, how he narrowed his eyes at Karn, how he flexed his hands. These mannerisms remained the same. High above, dark specks in the blue resolved themselves into dragons, diving for the complicated Weatherlight. The airship pivoted and gained altitude to engage the dragons, narrowly avoiding a gout of flame. Derrygaz threw himself at the Weatherlight's hull, clinging to the airship so that it wallowed in the sky. He used his back claws to rake the Weatherlight's draping intestinal cables like a cat gutting a rabbit. Yeah. Karn faced Airtie. I thought that was a great passage, talking about like just picturing the dragon going at it like a cat would with its back talons.
Yeah. Its underbelly, like making all the wires seem like intestines, is kind of pretty grotesque too. Yeah.
Right. So Airtie, we did talk about him. He was the guy who made Aaron Capuchin, leader of the Capuchin Knights, into a Phyrexian, faced off against Jaya and Ajani before the dreadnought burst out of the ground. His forearms. I posted a picture for you, Pete. Pete's narrowing his eyes. You'll remember as soon as you see him.
I'm putting it together. I do remember this guy. Okay.
So, is this why we were talking about Air Bud? Is this guy just high until he got good at playing basketball?
I don't think so, but that's a great bit. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that's what we're talking about.
We were talking about Air Bud recently. I forget why, but it was going to be on an art. But
it was the Ogryns. It's like there ain't no rules in the book. Like a giant idiot can't play basketball.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Because I had to draw that. That one's up here. Yeah. Put that one away.
So yeah, small refresher about Airtie because it's important. He had been a prominent figure during the first Phyrexian invasion. So the first time this story kind of happened, the first time the Phyrexians invaded Dominaria, this is the second invasion of Dominaria by the Phyrexians. During the first invasion, we had the local Justice League featuring the likes of Urza, of Karn, of a couple other people, and also Airtie. He'd been one of the crew of the Weatherlight, had flown it with the others in the plane's defense,
but at
some point was left for dead. At some point, the Weatherlight had to peel off and he didn't have time to get back on the ship, was left for dead. He was complicated from there. And spent all that time just kind of festering, I guess.
A Sarah Kerrigan moment there where she's like,
yeah,
being surrounded by all the Zerglings, she's firing her bullets, and then, yeah.
Fucking Meng.
Yeah, that was pretty intense. Son of
a bitch. So, Airtie seems doesn't like that Karn specifically left him for dead all those centuries ago. Been kind of holding a grudge. Okay. You know? Phyrexian Cyborg. He reveals that he made specific modifications to help himself defeat Karn over this time. He's like, yeah, I had a lot of centuries to just sit and think about how I can kill you, right?
Big magnets.
Pretty close, honestly.
Hell yeah. Is it like one of those things that you use to open a geode, like a chain with a hammer kind of thing? I feel like that's how you open up a Karn. But
is that how you open a geode? I always just put it in, like, wrapped it in a towel and bashed it with a hammer.
I've never opened a geode, but I've seen people open them online.
And it shows, Jamie.
You can use like one of those rock saws, but there's like people get a chain really tight and then just bang it. And then it looks like not like a chain, like chain link. It looks like a chain that would almost be on a bike. But anyways, I'll send you some geode cracking videos.
We'll swap geode cracking videos after this. Don't worry.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know if I've definitely seen one. I saw a guy do it with a hammer once, but okay. I've only seen one. How many geode cracking videos do you guys watch?
None. I did it myself. I didn't need the Indian guy with the notepad file to teach me how to do it. I just found it out, right?
I watched one yesterday of a guy who just kept going back to this like store, this Chinese store that had these rocks, and they're like basically like surprise geodes. Like you get to take it home and crack it open. Maybe you get something, maybe you don't.
Scratch ticket?
Yeah.
Scratch. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And he went back and he kept buying them and none of them had cool geodes.
So. I did one last year really and was really disappointed. Here. I did one last year and I was really disappointed that the crystals inside were like kind of yellowish white. And so I wanted like a purple one or something sexy.
Or a fossil. Imagine you got a fossil in there.
An ammonite, dude.
Yeah.
I have an ammonite already, so.
What? Oh.
I want purple.
Excuse me. Excuse me. Jesus Christ. There's an ammonite over here. Yeah. All right. Yeah, okay. Brag, dude.
This guy's got the golden ratio sitting right in his house.
Yeah, exactly. Right there, yeah. Keeps my energy balanced.
So Karn closes on an air tie. He's like, yeah, sure, buddy. You had a couple injuries to think how to kill me. Well, not going to let you do it. Airtai paralyzes him with a spell, rusting his joints instantly. So,
Tin Man's him.
Not magnets, but rust. Yeah,
corrosion.
Oh, oil can.
Oh man,
yeah, exactly. He's just like, dude. I cast oxidization. He's like, no.
Yeah. He's like, yeah. oil can, like a Phyrexian runs over with like glistening oil. He's like, no, not that one.
Karn obviously doesn't play League of Legends because a rolling golem gathers no rust, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to keep rolling.
What? Rolling? What?
Yeah. Just Blitz Crank listening to
Limp Bizkit. You know, yeah. he rides or dies. Joe Dirt.
Come on. Or big Fred pulse, get him. Yeah.
Airtai paralyzes Karn, then lifts him up into the air with his forearm. I have more quote for you guys. Airtai lifted his doubled arms, drawing Karn into the air as if Karn weighed no more than a piece of dandelion fluff. That grip tightened, squeezing. If Karn had been a being with lungs, he would have passed out. He clenched his jaw against it, but that gave him no relief from the agony that pulsed through him, emanating from his plating. His metal body made a crumpling sound, denting beneath the pressure. Airtai opened his hands, slowly, finger by finger, unfurling his fists, but he did not release Karn. You'll be unrecognizable, Airtai said. Beautiful and new. Frost bloomed over Karn's body, a white sheen that coated his metal. He cooled. He could feel the metal contracting, stressed by the temperature difference between the Shivan Desert heat and the magical ice. Airtai twisted his hands, a ringing gesture, then drew them apart. The tension changed from compression to a stretching as Airtai drew Karn's limbs away from his body. He was pulling Karn apart, limb by limb, like a cruel child torturing an insect. Karn's joints torqued under the pressure. Metal gave way in Karn's shoulders, and his knees, the joints, bent and mangled. What would it be like to die? Karn had never contemplated it, not as a realistic option for him. Death was something that happened to other people, a tragedy that he inevitably survived, and thought that he would always survive again. He had no way to fight this, no way to stop Airtai that he could think of, and the mana ray was being overrun. He would not like to die. Airtai grinned. The pressure intensified.
Apparently dying's a whole lot like the life of a Coors Light Rocky Mountain ice cold can. You just get fucking crushed and frozen.
Yeah, then Airtai picks him up in one hand, crushes Karn against his forehead.
Yeah, just to move on to the next one, because you know you can't just have one. Yeah,
Airtai hits him with the ice spell, and the Rocky Mountains on Karn's chest go blue.
Yeah, and then he stabs him in the chest with a pair of keys, and just like sucks. Yeah.
What will it be like to die? And just gets, drained.
Yeah, you don't drink your Coors Light until they're blue aligned, right?
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You gotta tap islands to drink before you can drink Coors Light.
I placed my Coors Light in attack mode. Yeah, the card looks so similar just to a normal water card, but anyways.
Yeah. So Karn, obviously fearing his own mortality for the first time here, he thinks, you know, what we all think of in those last moments. He thinks of the Silex, which he'd stashed away far just downstairs.
He told someone, though, right? He told someone in episode 2?
So in episode two, he told everybody the wrong place and told them each a different one.
Okay.
And it was a way of being like, whoever's trying to go there, I'll know that person was the enemy.
I thought he confided in one guy. He's like, this was the one I can actually trust, but I guess not.
I don't think so.
No. I have information leading that could lead to the arrest of Sjöldrid. And then you know the guy who tries to go get it is the Phyrexian.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, Sjöldrid's Frey.
Waffle House on Third and Columbus.
So, tell you who I am. Things aren't looking good for our good guys here, huh?
No, not looking very good so far. So he thinks of the Silex, obviously. If you'll recall, he's very afraid of the Silex falling into the possession of the Phyrexians. He's afraid of himself falling into the possession of the Phyrexians. And he's afraid of the Mana Rig falling into the possession of the Phyrexians. Kind of the logic behind staging the defense here was like, hey, all those pieces are in one place, so we can just have a concentrated defense again.
Right. Now he's got death to worry about, so there's a fourth thing.
Yeah, also, right? And he's like, he's been working on decoding the Silex to be able to take it to Phyrexia and blow up the plane of Phyrexia, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
He knows he must protect it. Even if he should die, he knows he has to do everything he can to protect it from falling into the Phyrexian's hands. So Karn, laying kind of like rusted and crumpled on the ground, reaches through the blind eternities, manages to cast a spell across the distance to the workshop in the Mana Rig to wrap the Silex in carbon fiber. Carbon filaments, it's described as, which I thought was a weird touch. He snaps
Is that not metal, so they can't copy it? Like,
that's a good point. You might be right. I didn't even think of that. I was like, why carbon? But that
he casts a spell through the blind attorneys, wraps it in a plastic bag. They're like, no! Oh, it doesn't break down. You can't complicate it.
Right. I should say, casting spells through the blind attorneys is super not easy to do. So it takes a toll on his magical juice, his mana, I guess you could say.
Okay.
Even over a short distance like this, it's just like,
You said a little bit earlier, just for like the title game, I really liked Rusted and Crumpled. That was nice. Okay. He's like, he's on the ground, rusted and crumpled.
I'll put it down for the losers.
Like an old can of Coors Light. feeling like a can of Coors Light.
Yeah.
Put that on a t-shirt. Yeah. We probably can't.
Yeah.
No, we can't.
Well, yeah. People, Coors Light, mostly water. Yeah,
bubbly.
Bubbly.
You know, a jellyfish and a Coors Light are 90% water.
Yeah, they share 90% of DNA.
Yeah, human beings actually share 76% of our DNA with a Coors Light.
That's why I piss on anyone who drinks Coors Light.
Yeah.
So he snaps the Silex shut in this nice little metal egg or egg of protection, and he kind of just comes to terms with being torn apart by the man with the bulging forearms. Get it? Forearms? Anyway, I wrote that one.
I was just picturing a metal Popeye. Yeah, just ripping him apart.
My metal spinach is all me.
Yeah, holding the pipe in his mouth.
I don't know what Popeye sounds like. If that's not obvious.
And he's really gravelly, right? He's like, is he?
I don't know.
What does olive oil sound like?
Oh, it's me.
Save me, Popeye. Probably. Again, don't know, but if I had to guess, probably. So he comes to terms with being torn apart, but just then what shows up but flying ship, not the Weatherlight, but the Golden Argosy. It appears in the sky.
The Argosy? Ajani.
Huh?
The Argosy?
I think we made that joke last
I feel time. Like this sounds familiar.
All right, yeah, I'm into it. All right.
Ajani hops off its deck and slices Airtie in the back. Airtie gives a nice little Wilhelm scream. Plummets off the Mana Rig side, surely to die off screen, right?
Yeah, sure. Just like,
definitely not confirmed dead, just falls off the edge. Warriors stream off the Golden Argosy, to join the fight, and Karn tells Ajani that they need to head to Joyra's workshop to get the Silex.
He's like all twisted on the deck, his face is sideways, like, yeah, we gotta get him.
Yeah, exactly.
Or he's like a cube from a junkyard at this point, just with Karn's face on it.
I like to picture he's like that he's doing like the cartoon like accordion thing where he's like,
oh yeah,
he's
squished.
Yeah, but
piano falls on him. All his teeth are piano keys. Yeah.
So he's like rusted, dented, crumpled, torn up joints, and he's like, okay, well, I can no longer be entrusted with the safety of the Silex. I don't know if I can get there anymore. So he tells Johnny, he's like, hey, you got to get us there. Let's go. We got to get there. Unfortunately, as they're having the conversation,
homeless guy picks him up and brings him in for return for 10 cents.
Yeah, puts him in a shopping cart.
He just walks up to a Johnny. Hey, you done with that, brother?
Wait, who shows up? I ruined your reveal.
It turns out the unhoused person who's just looking to make an income off of recycling, a noble effort, is Shieldred, none other.
Dang, she's picking up cans.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of limbs for it. So I posted a picture for you guys to look at, and I'll read you a short excerpt, which will describe her a little. She behind them. Big. Over the edge of the mana rig, a vast and burnished Verdian shape rose from the desert sands far below. That visage, those branching horns, Karn knew them too well. Shieldred, affixed now to some nightmarish construct from the ancient wars of Dominaria. It brought her small human torso level with the mana rig. Karn, when Shieldred spoke, her entire body resonated and her voice filled the battlefield, melodious, strange harmonic. You have the Silex for me. Karn's plan to use the Silex to draw Shieldred out had worked. Jaya, go to the workshop and get the Silex, Johnny said. We must get it away. Jaya nodded. Covering her own retreat with flares of fire, she backed into the workshop. Johnny and Teferi both flanked the doorway. Shieldred moved forward, not so much striding with her many legs as swimming through her army, gathering monstrosities into her body and incorporating them into herself as she went. She approached the mana rig from the side. Cannon fire rained down against her iron shell, but sheeted from her body. It did not damage her. Was she going for the joint between the mana rig sections? But Shieldred opened the mandibles on her dragon engine body and slammed her chest into the mana rig's bow section like a battering ram. The thud boomed through the mana rig. From the hull, metal grated on metal, the vibrations traveling through the entire rig. She extended her legs out into the Phyrexian army. Her writhing fibers withdrew into herself as her army swarmed up her body, using her legs as ladders and her dragon engine body as a ramp onto the mana rig's upper deck. So the Phyrexians swarm the mana rig, pouring over the walls, trying to storm into the workshop, which is now being guarded by Teferi, Ajani, and a heavily damaged Karn, while Jaya has gone in to get the Silex and presumably get it out of Dodge, right?
They're going to get out of this one, man. I'm pretty sure Phyrexians don't take over Dominaria. I'm pretty sure. I don't think that'd be a satisfying ending. But
who knows?
Yeah, it could be.
Jaya is a planeswalker. So the plan is, go get the Silex. She can just teleport. Just get out.
Yeah.
Grab it. Get out of here. Right. It's an easy plan. So they just got to buy her enough time to do that, which it's pretty instant, pretty instantaneous planeswalking. So
hey, hold them off for 3 seconds? We'll try. And they just like put Karn crushed into a cube against the door, like at an angle, like a chair. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah, so the cannon fire, which had downed the dreadnoughts, just bounces off of Shieldred's armor-plated body with that effect. The party's waiting for Jaya to planeswalk out, but she seems to be taking her sweet-ass time in there. Doesn't seem to be taking her the 3 seconds that it should, right? Shieldred's plan was to just let the Phyrexians swarm over, so she turned her body into like one big ramp, essentially, ramming into the side of the mana rig.
I love Transformers. My favorite one is the one that turns into a ramp.
Right. It'd be useful for all the cars, honestly.
Oh, hell yeah, actually.
Yeah.
Well, you can turn into one of those trucks with like the ramp on the back, you know?
Oh, a car carrier? The one that goes exactly. Like between dealerships? Yeah.
Yeah. The ramp on the back. Everyone knew what I fucking meant, Peter. Come on. Mr. Ammonite over here. also
it's imparted this wisdom upon me. The fossil wisdom, dude.
I think that's like one of the stronger battle bots was just like a ramp with wheels because it could just wedge itself under other battle bots and they would flip over. That might be a very strong. Speaking of which,
we should absolutely do it over Christmas break. I've been getting the battle bots in my YouTube shorts recently.
Okay,
and every time I do, I'm like, I'm so hyped to do it.
We got to do it. Yeah, we got to bet some.
The time is now.
Yeah,
New Year's Eve. Just come down during the day. We'll get drunk in the day,
and gamble on some robots. That sounds like
gamble on battle bots. Absolutely.
Your mom will love it, whatever.
Absolutely.
She'll have a great time.
Hell yeah. He's got horses. We could race them.
We turn them into battle bots.
Yeah.
Wait, now I'm talking like a Phyrexian.
It's like we can just gamble on regular horses, Ethan. You don't need to make them into cyborgs.
Well, I'm putting a ramp and a saw on mine, so good luck in the race, okay?
It's like one of those farrier videos where they're fixing the horseshoes, except they're just putting four ramps on the horses.
Turn it into a car carrier, right, Peter?
What? I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about.
You guys fight it out on New Year's. We'll film it.
I'm going to build the heavily armored horse, the dome one, and his ramp horse can go up against that.
The box, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to get the one big swinging hammer on my horse's head.
Okay. Yeah.
Every time they buck, it's like swings the hammer down.
And... Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So more and more Phyrexians are appearing every second, and behind the shimmering sea of them, two more dreadnoughts rear their ugly heads into view. So not only is Shieldred here, crashing into the mana rig, Phyrexians pouring over, they know where the Silex is, but two dreadnoughts have also shown up now.
And Jaya's taking her sweet-ass time with her instant transmission spell. Jesus.
So Darius,
that instant transport going Jaya. She's like rubbing her hands together, like I'm working on it.
Can't do it when you're watching. So Darius and his flight of dragons dive onto one of the dreadnoughts and begin tearing it apart plate by plate. Though the complicated weather light pursues them over the horizon, we see the Magnagoths, those ancient sentient trees of Yamivaya, hove into view and begin tearing Phyrexians in half, even as something happens beneath Karn's feet. The quote continues. The mana rig shuddered, then thrummed. Karn could feel the heartstone in his core hum in response, call and answer, like the beginning of a duet. Joyra must have completed her work, and she'd awoken the mana rig. It stood, slow and inexorable. Everyone on deck, even the Phyrexians, stopped fighting to regain their balance, swaying as the mana rig lifted itself to its feet. Karn could feel his body press harder into the decking, the airflow squeaking through his damaged joints, clean and hot in comparison to the battle's filth. It hurt his dented metal plating. The remnants of the bridge connecting the mana rig to the desert torn away. Shieldred's mandible screeched down the mana rig's length, and Karn could feel the entire structure lurch as she lost her grip on its hull. The mana rig was free. More on how it does defending itself for a change after the break.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Shieldred tipped, her balance disrupted. The mana rig strode forward along a rocky desert landscape, not graceful but efficient, well-balanced, crushing Phyrexians beneath it. It scooped up rock as it went and spewed molten lava across the seething Phyrexian army. Karn could not see the details, but he could see the results. Withering masses, shrinking as they burned, soon submerged under thick waves of molten rock. Welcome back from the break, everybody. The mana rig came alive, not something we knew it could do.
Yeah.
And it's a metal dog eat world out there.
I thought it was mana rig like an oil rig, like you just harvest mana out the ground. And then
So it was always super nebulous, not really clear what it was. There wasn't a ton of lore on it. It did like this is where like the original Weatherlight was created. It's from the ancient Thran, so like that ancient hyper advanced or very like magically advanced society, which is no longer exists. They had created it, and then like years later, they repurposed it to make the Weatherlight, and they've used it for some other things. This was, again, I want to say Langley High did a really good job with this story. I think it is quite good and one of the better magic stories, but like could have just thrown one piece of foreshadowing that, oh yeah, the mana rig can turn into a giant golem.
It sounds like it could be like a word for a vape in the magic universe, you know?
A mana rig?
Yeah, smoking from a mana rig, you know? Yeah.
I thought it was another ship because you specified it had a bow.
Oh.
Yeah, true. Yeah. And I guess that's the foreshadowing. They mentioned when Shieldred rammed into the bow.
It's like, oh, wait, a house doesn't have a bow? Because it's like a walking castle, basically, from what the image you showed us.
Yeah, exactly. It's Howl's Moving Castle, pretty much.
Houseboats right. Have bows.
Bowels moving castle?
Shut up. So things were looking dire. But it seems like with this, the fight against the Phyrexians had turned. They dislodged Shieldred, so they're able to like kind of stem the tide of Phyrexians pouring up the sides,
right?
And kind of just deal with the ones that are on deck.
I've always fantasized about getting out of traffic this way, where my car's tires would extend on rock legs I've thought about it a million times. I've always like because he just gets up and like walks through them, right? For me, the few times I've been in traffic recently, and it's a thing that I thought of as a kid too, like Doc Ock,
a true like, Transformer fan,
like Doc Ock extendo legs, where the tires of my car would flatten like hubcap down, and it would and I would just be able to walk through traffic like on big like spindly legs, like the Dolly elephants, basically, right?
It's like Pete looking at his dashboard with like wide eyes, being like, "Oh boy, I wish Bumblebee would show up and get me to work on time."
Every time he drives me to your house, it's terrifying. He's trying to go over smaller cars. It's pretty scary.
Yeah.
I'm mannering. I'm picturing now like all the good guys are gonna be like the Power Rangers whenever they combine their big mecha all together. So it's gonna be like Karn and Jaya and like a Johnny, and they're all in the control room. And like anytime they get hit, sparks go flying everywhere, and they like fly backwards.
Power Rangers when, Jamie? You seem to love that shit. You just lit up.
Yeah, man. Well, Power Rangers eventually. People have been asking for it.
So the fight is going well. We've got our car walking over traffic, no problem.
Nice.
The Magnagoths had shown up kind of on the horizon at the back of the Phyrexian ranks and were tearing into them. The Yavimayan elves, they have those like flying mounts, essentially. They show up like on the mana rig as well to help with the fight there. So we get reinforcements. Joda shows up with them. But despite all that, Karn, as a planeswalker, pretty attuned to the Blind Eternities, could tell that Jaya had not planeswalked away with the manor, with the Silex, right?
Okay, still.
So something's up, right?
Oh, fuck, is she a Phyrexian? Because there's still one.
Apprehensive, he turns to the workshop when Jaya emerged from Joyra's workshop, stepping into the space. No, Joyra. Joyra's workshop. So Jaya stepped out from Joyra's workshop. Joyra is here, and she was here. She did enable the cannons earlier. So you're about, gosh, how far into the episode are we? 40 minutes late on that one, but
Jaya,
I appreciate
Joyra,
it.
Close enough.
Okay. Sorry, I thought this was the crush, and she was going to be a Phyrexian, and it was going to be that much more heartbreaking to Karn, who hates Phyrexians and loves women.
Jaya, elderly pyromancer planeswalker.
Okay, yes.
Emerged from Joyra's workshop, stepping out into the space between Teferi and Ajani. In her arms, she held the titanium lump that Karn had generated around the Silex. Her teeth were gritted as she lugged it out. It had not occurred to Karn that an object of that size and weight might be difficult for a human to maneuver. I can't bring it through the Blind Eternities alone, Jaya admitted. It's too heavy for me to planeswalk with.
Wow.
What?
Yeah.
So. There's a carry-on for planeswalking?
Well, it's like you have to, I assume you have to like carry stuff with you. I don't know. I don't really know how it works because you can planeswalk with. I don't know if you can planeswalk. Like you can't bring somebody who can't planeswalk off the plane. So like, right. I guess you have to like be able to carry stuff. I don't know.
And not that I was assuming like you'd like end up nude on the other side of a planeswalk, right? Like where you leave your clothes behind in the plane that they were.
It's
like,
the opposite. If you'll remember, the Phyrexians, they only keep their clothes and they lose all the flesh.
Yeah.
Because they're not planeswalkers.
Right. This is, again, I'm not too critical. That is such a stupid fucking rule for magic teleportation.
No, don't worry. He said, he foreshadowed it. The first line in the book was, things that are heavy don't planeswalk easy. Anyways.
Yeah. Honestly, I think it is meant to be this moment of tension where it's like, why? Like, I think it's just like a setup and punchline more than anything. That right, it is like yeah. this moment of tension. It's obviously like a pitched battle. And then this idea that, oh, she can't. Planeswalk with it, so
yeah. She turns to Iron Man, who says something sassy to her, basically.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
I will give the author the an absolute pass on that because I thought it was.
I still love the story. That's just yeah. very silly.
So the quote continues. Karn nodded. He passed his bent hands over the case, stripping off its protective metal coating. Then he waved again, and the lockless chest opened. The Silex gleamed in its box. It alone would be light enough for Jaya to carry. Finally. Johnny's voice sounded distorted, not with bloodlust growl, but mechanical. Karn turned toward his friend. Johnny bared his teeth in an agonized grimace. He flattened his ears and clenched his good eyes shut, his skin undulated as if worms crawled beneath his fur's surface. Jaya made a noise of disbelief. Teferi stepped forward. No, Johnny couldn't be. Johnny's good eye widened with horror. He shook his head in denial and mouthed, no, 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 gripping his own arms as if he could restrain the Phyrexian fibers beneath his skin and prevent them from emerging. But they engorged, ripping open muscle and fur to reveal a sleek, dense Phyrexian musculature that had been installed beneath his own. Johnny had been complicated. He was the spy, the traitor. He'd betrayed them to S.H.I.E.L.D.
No.
So it's not good.
Cats Johnny... are so selfish, man.
James really struggling with his kitten these days.
We're having a better week this week than last week, but still, geez.
That's exactly
if she was a traitorous machine, you'd believe it at this point, right?
Yeah, totally would. Pissing in your bed and whatnot. Well, she's locked in the kitchen because last week she was jumping all over and aggravating the dog and aggravating me. So she's in the kitchen. She's going to get bit by a Phyrexian rat. And yeah.
Okay. So the more attentive listeners, so you two are excused, may have noticed that the moment Karn told Johnny of the Silex's location, Sheldred appeared. It was like mid-conversation as soon as he said the Silex is in Joyra's workshop.
Oh,
it's like
course,
the
yeah.
next sentence is like Sheldred's there. She's like, hey, you got the Silex for me, bro?
Right. She's like listening through his ears, basically, because he doesn't know he's a machine yet.
Yeah, exactly. The sleeper tells him this is new with the new Phyrexian invasions. The Phyrexians are able to do this is create these like completely like unknowing stooges, essentially.
Yeah, the bug's been planted on him. It's like the tin can's been like tucked into his belt and just like leads off the mana rig.
Yeah.
Hey, you wearing a wire?
a can taped to his chest.
He doesn't show symptoms, but he's got to call his partners and stuff.
Yeah. So Johnny, you'll also recall, had disappeared from the story for a while, right? When the Phyrexians attacked the tower originally.
Yeah.
Johnny had chased one across rooftops while Karn was like, oh, I can't because the balconies will break under my weight. So he couldn't go after Johnny right before Karn put the building into lockdown. Right. So that's why Johnny wasn't in the tower with them. He had fled across the rooftops to chase down a Phyrexian. While they were rooting around inside the tower, trying to find that lone Phyrexian and playing John Carpenter's The Thing, Karn had scried on Johnny, but he had had trouble focusing on him. At the time, it seemed either because Johnny was fighting Phyrexians or because he was talking to a young knight who presumably was a sleeper agent. So here's a quote from that story that I've read you guys this quote before. A haze filled the amulet's crystalline surface. Karn frowned. Johnny, where was he? The scryer stuttered, then resolved. Johnny seemed to be fighting. Karn could not make out the shadowed forms that Johnny exchanged blows with, but he suspected them to be Phyrexian, which explained the scryer's difficulty focusing on them. The image clarified, and Karn saw Johnny speaking with a young, compassion knight, a woman with a brash set to her shoulders. Right. So, like, even back then, he was already complicated because Johnny was trying to scry on him, thought he couldn't scry on him because he was near Phyrexians, but it's because he was a Phyrexian at the time.
Right. Now, as far as a actual lore question goes, not
big,
a bit.
Big robots don't scry.
Compliation, is this like a pod people thing? Do they clone them and replace them, or Do you get like stabbed with a AIDS needle?
Get stabbed.
Okay, and then it builds up inside of
you. Yeah, so we did talk about it a bit on earlier episodes. Like, Karn is very protective of his, like, fleshy friends, because Karn is impervious, because he is, he got Venser's spark. And he, right. Venser gave him his spark specifically to protect him from Phyrexian complication.
Right.
So he does not have to fear it. But any friend, if you just get, like, scratched by a Phyrexian, you risk getting infected, essentially.
Okay.
Just you get sick and you get the nanobots in your blood, and then they take over they start replicating inside you and taking over your system.
Right. Yeah, okay.
My Phyrexian cat scratched me up real good. I'm going to get it. I'm going to get the cat. What is it? Hot cross fever or something? Cat scratch fever.
That's it, yeah. Hot cross fever. That's when you cut your hand on a bun. Yeah. Okay.
Jamie's getting confused because everyone learns Steely Dan's Cat Scratch Fever on the recorder as their first song.
Cat Scratch Fever. Cat Scratch Fever.
Yeah, I got tagged by my cat's teeth in the fat part of my hand a couple days ago. It still hurts. Oh,
and Pete's got a whole belly on his hand right there.
Yeah, the chubby bit here.
Oh, it's Ted Nugent, Steely Dan, excuse me.
Okay.
So yeah, now here's a Johnny. After all this time, all Manchurian candidated up, ready to take the Silex from the weakened defenders. The quote continues. Jaya clutched the Silex protectively to her chest. Still stunned, she took one step back, retreating toward the workshop. Fire flared around her, encircling her. This motion seemed to trigger Ajani. He swept up his axe and drove it into her body. Jaya's back arched and her mouth gaped in pain. She fell. Teferi raised his hands, his magic slowing Ajani's attack. Karn rushed the Leonin, placing himself in front of Jaya, hoping that someone, anyone, could place a healing spell on her prone body. Ajani swung the axe into Karn's torso. Karn expected the blade to skid from his metal body, but it cut into him deeply, like he was no more than meat. Pain radiated up from the wound. Karn gripped the axe's handle and tried to wrestle it free, but the blade had embedded into him. Ajani effortlessly passed him by, Teferi too drained to slow him any longer. Shieldred calculated your strength well, the mechanical voice emanating from Ajani's throat sounded nothing like his usual growl. The Silex and Karn, two of the artifacts the Whispering One wished to obtain on Dominaria. You'd have to kill me, Jaya gasped, or I'd let you. Yes, Ajani said, simply. Hoisting her into the air with one hand, you are dying. Jaya coughed, maybe, but not alone. Fire poured outward from Jaya's body, a white and scarlet conflagration. Ajani snarled and leaned back, his fur burning away to reveal blackened wires and cables below the skin, the air filling with the reek of charred oil. With a thrust of his ruined hand, he hurled Jaya over the edge of the mana rig.
Jaya had her own little grenade behind the back trick, just like Karn did at the beginning.
Gotta watch a pyromancer, man.
Yeah.
There was a little nod in this story too, like earlier on, where she like casts a lightning spell and everyone's like looking at her like all surprised. I don't know if it was a deliberate nod to Avatar: The Last Airbender, where like very powerful firebenders can like lightning bend, essentially. They can create lightning if you can firebend strongly enough.
Okay, cool.
But I thought it was a funny little
There are like little sprinkles, like seasonings of other things, like the forest attack and the flying ship with the dragons are like Silmarillion stuff from Tolkien too.
Yeah.
So it's a very good use of existing, or at least references to like other cool shit used, I think, in a cool and creative way.
The Magnagoths are like so clearly the end from Lord of the Rings. Like,
yeah.
Like that seems like very deliberate. Not just in that like, oh, they're like tree people. But I think like the timing of them showing up to the battle, like they're described as like picking up Phyrexians and like tearing them apart, like in the movies you'd seen the Ents do to orcs and everything. Like, that seems very deliberate for sure.
Her last words, like you are indeed dying. She's like, not alone. Does read, at least with just limited context being given here, of just like, oh, I know, I'm taking this whole place, but just like killing everyone around her.
Like, yeah.
Well, trying to kill Ajani doesn't work. But she does get a hit off on him. But Ajani kills Jaya. Then he lifts the Silex in one hand and crushes it, which was a surprise to me. I was like, oh damn, I thought they wanted that, but I guess they just wanted it destroy it. I don't
just
know.
So it couldn't be used against them, I suppose. Like they
I
knew. Guess.
I don't know.
Right?
be like in the race for nuclear weapons, like the Russians find the blueprints, they're like, good, we'll destroy these
and just shred them.
Yeah. Vegeta crushes his only scouter, the only scouter on planet Namek. Vegeta crushes it so Frieza can't capture it and use it against him because he's so confident in his own ability. So I guess this guy's pretty confident.
Scanners like weapons.
It's used to find people, which they can find the Namekians, which means they can find the Dragon Balls, because the Namekians are so spread out and low pop that when you find a village, you basically find a Dragon Ball.
Gotcha.
I see.
Yeah. I'll do more Dragon Balls to you one day.
So crushes the Silex. Karn, despite being so robust in the past, had overestimated himself. It seems back in the caves of Koilos that Shieldred got too good a look at him and was able to figure out his weaknesses. I don't know if it was him or was Rona, the cyborg lady, who had figured it out, but like they kind of figured out like, oh, if you hit the metal this way, you could cut right into it.
The frequency, yeah. Shattering a glass with sound sort of thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That's something they don't tell you about cars. You could stab a car if you stab it in the right direction.
It's a guy playing steel drums and just lops off half of it. Oops. It just hit the perfect angle, you know.
Oh no.
Oh no.
My steel drums. Why?
Is that the accent of people with steel drums? Like
French. I was thinking of a French accent because I was thinking the crab who sings it has a French accent, right?
Oh, hey, yeah.
No, he's like Caribbean. The chef who tries to murder him is French.
I've never seen it. So.
Oh, Under the Sea.
I've never seen it. I've only seen one video of somebody cracking open a geode. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah. can't hold my breath that long.
So Karn, once more faced with his newfound mortality, got a big old double axe still lodged in him. Just watched Jaya get thrown off the edge. Watched the Silex, the one weapon he thought, you know, he could ultimately use against the Phyrexians to actually stop them. Shieldred slams into the mana rig, pinning it against a nearby mountain. So managed to get it against one side, topples the mana rig over onto its side against a mountain.
There is no magic media. Like, and this is driving me fucking insane right now, because like the idea of a centipede with a cyborg woman on the end of it crashing into a mobile castle and pinning it against a mountain is so fucking cool.
Right.
And there is nothing out there. It is just an inch and a half wide picture on a card.
Well, there's stories. I'm reading the stories right now.
But... I know, but like in motion, dude. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
It's all up to you, Pete. What can I say? Your title cards are bridging the gap for a lot of the listeners at home, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm doing my best. Doing my damnedest.
Tides of Phyrexians, who'd been waiting for that moment, stream off the mountain onto the decks. So pins it to the side of the mountain. There's Phyrexians waiting on the mountain to jump down onto the mana rig. Once more, the tide of battle swings back into the Phyrexians' favor. The quote continues, or the story continues. Shieldred split apart, her small humanoid half popping itself off its massive dragon engine host body, revealing a snake-like spine that she used for her insertion into her larger host body.
Ew.
Her humanoid part slithered down her massive torso and dove onto the mana rig's deck. She moved towards the planeswalker. Her horned helmet folded back. It did not show the gore and metal Karn expected, but rather pallid skin. Shieldred revealed a fine nose, full lips, and large, dark, sorrowful eyes like a doe's.
Fuck, she's hot. No.
Yeah, phew, she's fuckable. I was worried for a sec we're just going to have some metal bitch, some cold metal bitch. But no, she's got some good full lips, beautiful eyes. All right, tell me about her waist. Come on.
It's metal bones, I think.
Yeah. No doubt, she had harvested her face from some poor woman long dead. So, necrophiliac much, I guess?
I mean, we all wear masks.
Okay, fair. She pressed one small pale hand to Karn's chest. I have the mana rig. I have you. Dominaria is vulnerable to invasion. All the wonders of my people will become your wonders. All our beauty will become your beauty. There is only one truth. The next step in evolution will be complicated. All around the battlefield, Phyrexians murmured, there is only one truth. The murmur rose from the ranks, softer than a wind from distorted mass, and far more eerie. It did not happen like I planned it, Karn. Thanks to your efforts. She clutched a chain around Karn's neck that held his scrying device, locator, and the gadget he'd used to communicate with the Weatherlight. No, this is better. I do have a plan, Karn. A plan for you and for Dominaria. For all the planes. I guess you're going to be disappointed. Joyra's words boomed, amplified by the rig's structure, because you won't get what you want today. A long pause, as if Joyra had to force herself to do what she knew was right, but Karn believed in her. Then, an ominous ticking emanated from the mana rig's central structure. Joyra had triggered the mana rig's self-destruct mechanism. The golden argosy broke away, racing into the sands. Joda, Joyra shouted. Portal everyone out of here now. Joda wrenched himself to his feet. Around the mana rig's deck, portals whirled into existence, swallowing up nearby troops. The gaping soldiers who weren't sucked in got shoved through by friends quicker to understand what was about to happen. Joda pulled up a portal and threw Danitha, Rata, and Maria into it, shifting them to a safe location away from the blast radius. He even ensured that Maria's precious Kavu would not be left behind, enveloping it in a whirling portal. Lastly, Joda looked at Karn. His eyes bright with regret, he stepped back through his final portal. The decks grew eerily quiet. Joldred, with her stolen face unmoved, Ajani controlled, his arm a skeletal and charred ruin where Jaya had burned him. Karn waited. The mana rig explodes. Across the landscape, the survivors gather to mourn their defeat. They'd lost the mana rig, they'd lost Silex, they'd lost Ajani, Jaya, and Karn. They licked their wounds and burned Phyrexian corpses, but the fight was far from over. The mana rig had blown up, so the invasion had stopped for now. But as Shouldred had said, Dominaria was vulnerable to invasion. The Phyrexians had been driven back by the explosion of the mana rig, but the plane was more vulnerable now than ever before. The various factions dispersed, returned to their homes to recover as much as they could while they waited for the apocalypse to come knock. The survivors hold a memorial to Jaya, leaving a gravestone unmarked so that when Karn returns, he could inscribe it. At the funeral, however, is a new face for us, at least. The planeswalker Sahili Rai, inventor extraordinaire from Kaladesh, plane of magical invention. So we've talked offhand about Kaladesh before. It's where Chandra is from.
Okay.
It is like, it's Aetherpunk would be the punk suffix to describe it, which is like steampunk but with magic instead of steam. So it's all okay. Magic. You get big blue crystals.
I was gonna say blue steam or whatever.
Yeah. They would smoke mana rigs.
They would absolutely smoke mana rigs. Yeah. Okay. Kaladesh. Exactly.
Yeah, cool.
So this planeswalker Sahili Rai was not on the plane of Dominaria during the invasion, but she is here now during the funeral for Jaya. We see her. Because together, Fairy and Sahili have a plan. They venture to Urza's Tower, the stronghold built by the ancient planeswalker during the First Brothers War. Centuries and centuries and centuries ago. I sent you guys a picture just because it's a cool looking tower. Clutched into Fairy's hands, tattered and singed pieces of paper. They'd lost the clay tablet depicting how the Silex worked. But they still had Karn's drawing. Sahili, brilliant inventor as she was, had figured out how to recreate the mechanism from those drawings. Though,
okay, cool.
Karn was still the only person who knew how to activate it. So she could build it, she's pretty sure, exactly as it was built, but still doesn't know what the trigger switch is.
Okay.
They did, however, have some historical information on the last time it was detonated, because it ended the Brothers' War. And luckily, someone here just happens to be a chronomancer, right?
Oh.
So Teferi, pretty famously, has vowed to never travel back in time. I didn't actually look into why. I know he has like a sorrow story about like his wife dying or like his partner dying.
Like policy to have. Good policy to have. People are going to do a lot of things if you start... doing one thing, going back, then
exactly.
Where do you stop?
So he's
I want to go back and kill Hitler and fuck things up for the future.
So he never travels back in time, but he's gonna travel back in time for this to figure out how to detonate the Silex.
Okay.
You guys mentioned a funeral just before it gets too far away. Have you ever driven to Cornwall and seen that place where they sell coffins and they got the big sign that they could put the letters up? And I remember when we were in high school, we would drive by. And it'd be like, it's a place where you buy coffins, right? And it's like, we put the fun in funeral. And like,
jeez,
the Christ. Tone is just so off. Way imagine off. Walking to get a funeral way, stuff way off. A loved morbid. One passed away. Yeah.
I haven't seen it. To be fair, I've only been to Cornwall maybe twice in my life.
I can see the sales pitch. I can see it working for a portion of their sales audience, which
like
is
like burying a clown. Like,
well, it's got like a much
clowns
much
are buried at sea, Jamie. You don't need a coffin for them.
they've just clown coffins have like a check at the bottom to fit the shoes.
Yes, yeah. It kind of looks like a sarcophagus. Yeah,
I was actually thinking
the makeup and the nose on it.
Yeah. I was actually thinking. I think some people buy their coffins before they die. Like, I think some people will like
absolutely.
Go out and buy their own, which like if I was buying my own coffin, then I'd be like, yeah, let's go to the fun place. Let's go to the place with like the ball pit and the twisty slide. You know yeah. what I mean?
My dad called me excitedly to tell me, hey, I got all my stuff figured out for my funeral. So you don't have to do a thing. I'm like, yeah. Wasn't thinking about it, but thanks. Yeah. Good. I did that it's done. Yeah. I had to do everything for my mom's and it was not a fun thing. But yeah. At the same yeah. time, to call me excited about it is also a little weird. Yeah. He puts remember, the fun in funeral, I bet. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember like the like my ex's mother's death certificate. It took from August to February to show up. So it's like not what? Having to deal with that is probably
that's a
long nice. Time,
man. Yeah, it's too it's long.
A really long time.
Yeah.
Quebec, dude. They won't even let you yeah. die here.
Right?
They send it to you in French first.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably. Yeah. Fuckers.
Yeah, my wife's name was wrong or is wrong on her birth certificate because she had a birth certificate, which at the time it was your municipality which printed your birth certificate. So she has her municipality's birth certificate. And then in like 2001, they switched to provincial birth certificates. So it's like a standardized birth certificate.
She's like when, 10 already. What the fuck?
Yeah. Well, like what? Like it's worse than that when like her grandfather had to get his birth certificate from like the 1930s, like standardized to the provincial one. Your parents did this for you, Pete, because you were born in Quebec.
Yeah, I don't yeah, even yeah. know how old he is. That. Like cut him open, count the rings. Jesus.
So it was funny. He like... He was younger than he said he was, than his birth certificate said he was, because he forged his birth certificate to join the army to join the Second World War.
Wow.
A year before he could, or 2 years before he could.
Okay.
And they tried to deny him it, his new one, because they tried to accuse him of stealing 2 years of social security, basically.
Oh, fuck you.
Because he claimed his social security benefits 2 years early. Because that's when his birth certificate allowed him to. But he also just like didn't really know when he was born because that was like a time when he didn't really track yeah. that stuff.
Yeah, like I don't know when my grandfather's birthday was because he was born in like a shack outside of Athens. And when somebody got to Athens in the 30s to let someone know a baby had been born, it was like, okay, when? Like 2 or 3 days ago. It was like yeah. we had a span like yeah. of a week in January.
Yeah, yeah.
And his grandfather is really strong. He started picking up the corner of the house to get his ball and stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was given a young Pegasus as a child.
Yep.
And that's all I know about Athens, I think, is that Hercules was there once.
Was there once.
Sorry, not to change the subject.
No, it's all good. I actually, we're just about at the end here. I just have a quote to take us home. So to finish this off, the planar bridge's red light faded. Karn gathered from the chitters echoing throughout the darkness that he stood in a vast cavern. He could sense mineral deposits, the weight of quartz stalactites overhead, and he could smell cold, damp stone. He felt ill, wrong, as if the turbulent passage through the blind eternities had coated his metal surface in an unclean film. He knelt, his crumpled body still aching from the battle on the mana rig's deck. He hoped the others, Joda, Joyra, Teferi, had fared better than he and Jaya. No, better not to think of that. Not until he could mourn. White light flared, overwhelming his senses. The chittering noises stopped. Elish Norn stood before him, glowing as though she housed a star. Her attenuated limbs had an insectile delicacy, and her long face had an anthropod's beauty. Her smile was narrow and self-satisfied, even as she scraped a servile bow in his direction. Welcome, father. Elish Norn's voice was a throaty, pleasing contralto. Welcome home. Karn looked around for Ajani and Shieldred. He had seen the planar bridge engulf the Praetor, as well as his complicated friend, but he saw no sign of them from here. It must have deposited them elsewhere. Only he and Elish Norn stood upon this plateau, heaped with drifts of white porcelain sand. Below the plateau, insectoid Phyrexians seethed in a glistening white gold mass. Norn grabbed his chin, wrenched his attention back toward her. "You have been away for far too long," she hissed. "We have missed you. You deserve to share in the glory of what is to come." Karn tried to rise, but found he could not move his legs. He tried to summon his spark to transport himself somewhere, anywhere, but he was too broken, too tired. Norn's claws dug into the metal of his cheeks, turning his head. His neck complained at even that motion, the joints grinding together, and then he saw it. A small, stunted sapling growing from the porcelain sand. Its gnarled, delicate branches reminded him of the small trees he saw above the timberline in the mountain. Its pale limbs glistened with an iridescent sheen. Beads of oil hung from its twigs like buds. Even now, in this hell, surrounded by monsters, he couldn't help but feel a tenderness for that tree, a living thing, fighting against all odds to survive. What is it? Norn leered down at him, her rows upon rows of teeth spreading in a mocking rictus. "It is the beginning of great things, father. It is the beginning of everything." And that's how it ends. That's how the story of the Dominarian invasion ends. So you're right, Jamie.
Not very happy, huh?
The Phyrexians don't invade Dominaria, but...
It's not like the good guys got out that great. Could you say the one part where there was two words before talking about her voice in a something something contralto?
Yeah, she also sounded hot too.
Throaty pleasing contralto.
Throaty pleasing contralto. That's a good one. And contra alto. I'm trying to break that down. Alto would be one of the highest registers, just below soprano, I think. It was the highest. So is contra like opposite of alto? Is that like a bassy voice? What's a contralto?
It is the
like Barry White
lowest singing female voice, specifically.
Of course. Yes.
Okay. It's so you're getting like a throaty, deep female voice. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. I didn't know that. Learn something new every day. Throaty,
but also rows upon rows of razor sharp teeth. You know.
Well, yeah. Yeah, and Karn's not doing so good. He's getting so this thing that's growing, this is like this is a Phyrexian tree.
So I've read way too much Magic Story at this point. I couldn't be bothered to look it up. So we've talked about Elish Norn in the past, and we talked about New Phyrexia, and we talked about the five spheres of Phyrexia. Elish Norn, Grand Cenobite, is the leader of the Phyrexia. There's five praetors, one for each color. The white aligned one is the strongest of them and the leader of them, and the one spearheading this whole invasion, the one who sent Shieldred and Gingataxis and Vorinclex to other planets. Yeah. Urabrask, you guys will remember, the red aligned one, is kind of like, fuck off with your invasion. I do my own. I feel like when we told the story of the five spheres, there was a story of like a tree growing in her domain, her perfectly white aligned mechanical beauty.
Yeah, like every time I looked her up, it's all like ivory and gore, like all fused together, right?
I hate when people are on Twitter talking about their white aligned mechanical blue beauty. awful.
I feel like, and the listeners will remember this better than you two. I feel like I did tell the story, like there was a tree growing out of the roots and she went to go pluck it, and then like an arm came out and there was like all flesh beneath, and it like ruined the beauty of her place, of her palace, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's like a nice little parallel that there is like a tree there, and this is beautiful foreshadowing that like, hey, from that dream, something has come and she has an idea. Now she's okay with the tree being there because she was very insistent on like uprooting it the last time we saw this.
Perfect merger of like imagery. Phyrexian and flesh, right? Like this.
We're seeing the same imagery twice, right? Like the last time we saw it, it was like an aberration and it had to be plucked. And now this time we see it through the eyes of somebody else who sees it as this beautiful thing. Like Shieldred probably considered it at the time. Like when we heard the story last time, if Karn had been there, Karn probably would have been like, oh yeah, it's great that there's a tree growing in her garden, right? But now she seems to be like, this is the beginning of great things. So she has a little something up her sleeve, my guys. Right. Thanks for listening, everybody. I don't know when we'll get to Invasion of the Multiverse and like, you know, the rest of the Phyrexian arc. Honestly, I still do love the Phyrexians. I'm going to do Gundam at some point in the near future. There's a couple other things that I actually want to revisit, so I don't know when we're going to continue this story, but
speaking of continue, I think we will be off next week for the holidays too. So if you're expecting us the week of the 25th and the 1st, we're going to just take a little time off, be with our family, see each other, hang out, but we'll be back in the new year.
Be the 27th of December. No regular episode is the assumption. Yeah.
Yep. I think this is the only time we've planned to take a week off all year. So
we're adults now, finally.
Yeah. Yeah, I think more than a year, but yeah. We love you guys. Thanks so much for listening. Really means the world to us that you guys are here every week and you guys get excited about the stuff that we talk about. Mm-hmm. We do have a million more episodes that we want to do, and we want to talk about all the things that you want to hear. And the best place you can let us know about that stuff is probably our Discord, discord.gg/loreboys.
LoreBoys. That's where all the stuff happens. That's where we're chatting. That's where we're hanging out. If you want to be a part of the community, people have nights where they hang out and chat. So I was just playing Red Dead the other day, and I just felt like streaming, but not really streaming. So I think I hopped in a channel and just like put my live on, see if anyone wanted to watch. And so yeah, just discord.gg. That's where the community is.
Yeah. You get David, our moderator, posting the video of the TLC video where the guy wants to have sex with his car.
Classic. I wonder what that's referencing, huh, guys?
Classic TLC documentary? Well, it's referencing Peter wanting to skip traffic.
Oh, of course.
You got to motivate your car by having sex with
it. Nothing about
well, you have to offer it sex.
Yeah. Nothing about that Transformers episode where you accused me of fucking cars the whole time, of course.
I have never accused you of anything.
No, you completely put that out there on your own. You're like, no. Yeah.
You gaslighted me now, even cars. Now, years later.
I get aroused by cars. I want to have sex with them.
Just saying gaslight gets me a little going. Just gonna
go. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gaslight's on. Peter, is there anything you wanted to say to the listeners before we close?
At Loreboys Podcast on Instagram, come say hi. Thank you for all the follows. A lot recently, which was surprising. Kind of slowed down for a bit after we cleared 1,000, which was cool. I didn't do last week because we recorded late, and then I kind of got wrapped up in pre-holiday bullshit, but there's always things there to look at. Regardless, and yeah, again, thanks for all the follows, all the support out there. excuse me. Inhale my own spit. The Spotify Wrapped was a lot of fun. People sending stories that we were tagged in, like, oh, you know, yeah. You're my first, second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever. I listened to 27,000 hours of Loreboys last year, and I'm
crazy. You guys are insane.
Cool. I didn't know we put out that much content. I hope you're healthy.
Yeah. Super, super
cool. All very cool. I love that.
Yeah. If you guys like the show, the best way you can help us out is by leaving us a review or telling your friends about us. To help us continue to grow and find the algorithm and get the thumbs up from Google and all that stuff. If you want to support the show financially, we do have a Patreon, Loreboys, where you get access to a couple bonus channels in the Discord. You get access to some bonus content on Patreon.
Coming up on 100 episodes of bonus content. So there's a lot there these days, ranging from half an hour. I think we started, there were 15 minutes. They quickly became half an hour. Some of them go as long as an hour. So ton of stuff there. A lot more about our like personal lives and like kind of, wow, just what's going on in life and stuff too. So
it's the vlog style stuff.
Yeah. Just more open conversations.
My own cat scared the fuck out of me and my camera just there. Holy Jesus.
Yep.
And for anyone who doesn't trust Patreon, of course, we do have Loreboys Prime, where we're always looking for new people to join the rank and file of our army of monsters. So we're looking for people with skills, probably tradespeople primarily. In the lore folk army. Sexy lips is a must. I'm looking for somebody who could put a ramp on a saw on a horse. So get in touch if that's you.
Also looking for someone to install like saw blades in my horse arena, like some pyrotechnics out the side, maybe some hammers. Yeah.
And I need shock arms on my 2016 Mazda 3 so I can walk through traffic.
Yeah. Also, if anyone's ordering parts to make glue, we're going to have a lot soon.
Yeah. So to recap, we want pouty lips. We want a full-throated contralto voice. Who's also able to surgically graft a working saw blade onto a horse and install some pyrotechnics in my horse arena.
Right. And I also want my horse to have Botox big lips, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, oh, we no, could probably recycle the glue back into their lips.
Oh, hey. Right.
Well, they take the glue from one part of the horse's body and reinsert it into a different part of its body.
We cut the hooves off and put little wheels at the bottom of their feet.
Yeah.
Like squeaky shopping cart wheels.
They completely operate on glue hydraulics on the inside, right? That's
squeaky shopping cart wheels on a horse trying to go through like a sand arena, you know?
And I want a walking car. That's the most important one.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, most important to you.
Fair enough.
I think that would go to it.
Lore Boy
wants his BattleBot horse.
Goodbye.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.